Marella Amato joins me this week to discuss pairing beer and food. This is Beersmith Podcast number 286.
This is the Beersmith Home Brewing Show, where brewing great beer is our passion. If you want to take your brewing to the next level, visit Beersmith.com, where you can download a trial version of our Beersmith software, subscribe to the newsletter, and get dozens of free articles on home brewing. And now, your host and the author of Home Brewing with Beersmith, Brad Smith.
This is Beersmith Podcast number 286, and it's mid-August 2023. Marella Amato joins me this week to discuss pairing food and beer. Thank you to this week's sponsors, Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. Every issue of Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine is packed with articles for homebrewers and beer lovers. They offer access to videos, brewing courses, exclusive articles, and the amazing Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. Go to beerandbrewing.com to get your subscription today. And also the American Homebrewers Association. The American Homebrewers Association invites you to choose your own brew venture. Join for 1 year and select a free brewing book for more than 60 titles to match your fermentation goals. Visit homebrewersassociation.org/beersmith to join the American Homebrewers Association and treat yourself to a new book. Again, that special link is homebrewersassociation.org/beersmith. And Beersmith Web, the online version of Beersmith brewing software. Beersmith for the Web lets you design great beer recipes from any browser, including your tablet or phone. Edit recipes on the go with access to the same suite of recipe building tools as our desktop version. Try Beersmith Web today by creating a free account at beersmithrecipes.com. And finally, a reminder to click that like and subscribe button on YouTube, iTunes, Spotify, or whatever platform you're listening on. Clicking those buttons is a great way to support the show. And now let's jump into this week's episode. Today on the show, I welcome Marella Amato. Marella is a BJCP National Beer Judge and one of the very few master Cicerones in the world. She is also author of the book Beerology and runs an online course called Mastering Beer and Food Pairing, brought to you by Beerology. Marella, it's great to have you on the show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. Very well. It's a quiet, rainy day, and I'm very much enjoying it.
And you're coming from Toronto today, right? Right across the pond from where I grew up in Rochester.
Yes, Toronto, Canada. This is my home. It's I've gone astray here and there, but I've always come back. It's definitely my home.
Well, it's actually been, I think, almost 5 years since I last had you on. You were a guest one time before, though.
Yes.
And last time, I think you talked about Beerology and some of the other things you've been doing. But what projects have you been working on these last 5 years?
Yeah, I think actually I was speaking about judging, if I'm not mistaken. I'm definitely still doing that, or well, I guess it would be probably more accurate to say I'm doing that again because the pandemic put that on pause for a minute. And then still consulting through Beerology. I do beer education and beer quality consulting through my company. I also started working for a company called WSET, which is a not-for-profit global drinks education organization. And in my spare time, I created this online course on pairing beer with food, which is what we're going to be focusing on today.
Awesome. Yeah, I look forward to that. I've only had a couple episodes out of the, 285 I've done or so on food pairing. So this will be good.
The best one.
It's the best one. This will be even better than the ones I did before. Absolutely. So. Well, let's explore some beer and food pairings. What are some of the advantages of pairing beer and food? I know a lot of people don't really think about it. I mean, it's certainly done very commonly with wine, but what are some of the advantages of pairing your beer with your food?
For me, beer and food pairing is really about taking beer appreciation to the next level. We're at a stage now where there's a great beer selection out there. We have all kinds of styles and flavors available to us. And pairing them with food is really using them to their maximum advantage. So, for example, like if I'm having a hamburger, I can go ahead and have it with a lager and that'll be fine. But if I take that burger and I pair it, let's say, with an English style porter, and the charred and toasted notes on the meat and the toasted notes on the bun are tying in with the toasted and roasted notes in the beer. And perhaps I can put some caramelized onions in that burger and tie in with some of the sweeter notes from the caramel malts in the beer, maybe throw in some lettuce to tie in with the herbal hop notes. And suddenly there's an exchange of flavors happening on the tongue. There's this new heightened experience. If you pair beer and food properly, both the beer and the food will taste better than they do on their own. And so it's just a wonderful experience. It's also tons of fun. And there is beer and food information out there, but it's sometimes contradictory. It can be confusing. So my journey for the last number of years has been really to examine how it's done, to read all the literature that's out there, the studies, which are mostly sadly in the wine sphere, but there still are studies on how beverages and food interact, and to try to make sense of it all and to present it in a way that is straightforward and easy to accomplish. Because at the end of the day, you know, putting together like a spectacular pairing in a consistent fashion does take practice, but to put together just a good pairing is pretty easy.
Interesting. Well, maybe we'll get to explore some of those common foods that might pair up with certain beers in a minute. I want to ask you, you know, as part of your course, you sent me some notes. What are some of the basic principles for food and beer pairing? I think you have a couple of them listed.
Yeah. So when you want to pair beer with food, the basic idea is that you break down all of the flavors in the beer, and then you break down all of the flavors in the food, and then figure out how those flavors will interact with each other. So taking a non-beer example, let's say we're going with mint, which is something that can accompany food sometimes. That's fresh, it's bright. It's crunchy, so that'll go work really well with something like a watermelon salad, which is also fresh and crunchy. Probably that mint won't go as well with a burger that I just described, right? So it's something you can certainly do on an instinctive level, like I just did right now. But the more you understand how to break down all the different traits in beer and how to break down the traits in food and how they interact, the better you become at pairing beer with food. So the traits that you want to look at are flavor, intensity, taste, and texture.
Interesting. Well, let's explore those a little bit. Maybe walk through them one by one. Let's start with beer flavor, since that's the one I'm probably most familiar with.
Yeah, of course. It's always best to lead with flavor. Like you said, it's something that's familiar, something that we know. And so when pairing beer with food, there's two approaches with flavor. And one is to match the flavor in the beer with the flavor in the food. So I was just talking about that burger and how there's the toasted notes both in the bun and the burger and in the beer. So that's called finding a bridge. And the other thing that you can do is create a bridge. So I talked about adding caramelized onions to pair with the caramelization from the caramelized, from the caramel malts in the beer. So that's creating or finding a bridge. And then the second approach is to find two flavors, a flavor in the beer and a flavor in the food that go well together, that you know go well together. And a classic example of this is Randy Mosher. I'm sure you and most of your readers are familiar with his book. And in that book, he talks about enjoys pairing like an amber lager with a cheese. And that's because the combination to him tastes like a grilled cheese sandwich. It's got, He knows that grilled notes and cheese pair together. So that's the other way that you can approach it. And the good news is when, especially with beer, particularly with beer, this is easy to do because there are so many flavors in beer that you can also find in food. You know, when we're looking at the malt side of things. Yeah.
I was just saying, that's kind of interesting. Randy, you know, we had Randy on the show a number of times talking about his book, Tasting Beer. Mm-hmm. And he does talk quite a bit about how the flavors, you know, trigger memories in your mind when you're working with something. So, you know, it'll trigger, like you said, maybe like the grilled cheese, where it's something that's very familiar to you originally, right?
Yeah.
By
if you know two things go well together, you can pair those two things together, right? Yeah. So that's the idea there. And yeah, so as I was saying, there's a lot of flavors that beer and food have in common. You know, you look at malt flavors, the bread, toast. I talked about caramel earlier, chocolate, coffee. These are all flavors that you can find in food. Then you have your hop character, which can be fruity or tea-like. Again, flavors that we find in food. We look at yeast and the fruity notes and, you know, clove, pepper, nutmeg. Or if we get into bacteria, yogurt, and vinegary notes. These are all things that can be found in food. So finding and creating bridges is really straightforward and quickly becomes intuitive. I would say the only thing to be careful of is that you want to make sure you have more than one bridge. I say ideally three or more. And you can create a pairing with just one bridge. A common thing that I'll see done is like, oh, chocolate beer, I'm going to pair that with chocolate cake. And that'll work. You can do it. It should pair nicely, but it's kind of flat, right? There's not much going on there. It's all the same. So if you can find a couple of different bridges and a little bit more complexity, you'll end up with a more compelling pairing.
Now, you talked a lot about building bridges. What about trying to leverage complementary flavors? I mean, is that a good approach too, that maybe you pick a beer that complements a particular flavor in the food, for example?
Yeah, so the complementary flavors are what we were talking about earlier with the Randy Mosher. So, you know, this beer is very fruity. I like fruit with chocolate, so I'm going to guess that this beer is going to pair well with this chocolate. Hmm. And the key there is you do have to find some underlying bridges to strengthen that pairing. But yeah, that's the other, it's really interesting to have you point out that term, because one of the things that I found when I was researching this is there are many different terms for the same thing. So I talked about building bridges earlier. Some people call that affinities. Some people call it harmonies. Mm-hmm. And it was very interesting to see that there's all this vocabulary out there, but at the end of the day, the actual approaches are very few. They just have many different names.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, next, let's discuss intensity. What do you mean by the term intensity, and how do we pair intense foods and intense beers, I guess?
Yeah. So when we're talking about intensity, we're talking about the overall impact of a food or a beer. It's actually pretty straightforward. So let's look at the spectrum, for example, of dark beers. And so you can have beers that have similar roasted notes, maybe a similar balance. And on one end of the spectrum, you have your Russian Imperial Stout. And on the other end, you have like a mild, for example. Mm-hmm. Those are beers that are similar in profile, but the intensity is vastly different, right?
Absolutely.
On the food side of things, let's say we take like a tomato curry. You know, on one end you have a vindaloo, which is super spicy. Mm-hmm. You know, it's going to wake you up. And then on the other side, something like a mutter paneer, which is, you know, a cheese in that tomato curry, but often not spicy. So that's a lot less intense. And the idea is that you want to line up the intensity of your beer with the intensity of your food. So obviously, if you're have a green salad in front of you, you're not going to have it with a barley wine, because that barley wine is just going to bowl over the salad. And on the flip side of things, if you're having like a jerk chicken, you're not going to want to have that with a light lager, because you might as well be drinking water at that point. And I find that once you've got your flavors sorted out, the intensity piece is fairly intuitive. Like, let's say you had like a rich vanilla custard cake in front of you. Mm-hmm. And you had that Russian Imperial Stout or that mild, which of the two would you pick?
Probably the mild, I guess.
Oh, really?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you're saying you want to match the intensity, right? So to me, yes. A cake's not super intense. Maybe I'm wrong, but.
Well, so this is why it's important to really break down all of the different characters. So that cake is going to have some sweetness to it. It's going to have richness to it. And those are things that add to intensity. But yeah, intensity can take on different forms, right? We talked earlier about the vindaloo, which has an intensity from spice. Intensity can come from richness, you know, from fat. That can cause intensity. Smoke can cause, there's so many things. So yeah, with a rich vanilla custard cake, I would definitely reach for that imperial stout. You can try it with the mild. I mean, maybe the other thing is, you know, we don't have the cake in front of us. It's very possible the cake that you were picturing is not the cake that I am picturing, right? So,
well, I like stouts, so I'd probably drink the stout with almost anything, but that's just me.
Absolutely. Well, the chances are that you also gravitate towards foods that taste good with stouts, I would imagine.
Yeah, that's so, probably true.
Yeah, yeah, it makes sense. So that's the intensity piece. And, you know, as we just highlighted, I think it's a perfect example. You know, you can't just hypothetically create a pairing out of thin air. And this is one of the issues that I have with many books that say like, oh, pair this beer with this food and this beer with this food. And this beer. It's like that beer, like, for example, you take a Saison, like what kind of Saison? Saison could, you know, it's a huge thing. And just now we were talking about that vanilla cake. And the vanilla cake that you were imagining might not have been the same cake that I was imagining. And so you can't, unless you actually have the cake in front of you, know what it is that's going to pair best with that specific cake, or if you have the recipe.
Yeah, I mean, for me, like something like vanilla cake is pretty mild, pretty neutral, I think, in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. But that's just how I see it, you know.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, so we've talked a little bit about intensity, and you said in general you want to try and match the level of intensity roughly.
That's right.
You don't necessarily want a really intense beer with a mild food or whatever. Let's go on to taste. Now taste to me again seems self-evident, but how do we differentiate, for example, taste from flavor? Because you talked a lot about flavor a minute ago.
Yeah. So when we're talking about flavor, we're talking about like chocolate, butterscotch, vanilla. Why am I on a dessert kick all of a sudden today? And when we're talking about taste, I'm sure most of your listeners are aware.
That brings up, I don't want to throw you off, but that brings up a kind of an interesting question to me is, if I'm going to pair a dessert, do I treat it like a wine, you know, where I go for a dessert wine? It might be a sort of a sweet, kind of a rich flavor to the wine. Would I do the same thing with beer?
You could take that approach. I think a dessert wine is generally going to be quite a bit sweeter than even the sweetest beers.
Yeah, I think that's true too.
So in that case, it's a perfect segue to what I was about to talk
about.
Okay,
yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'll go ahead and we'll see if it helps to answer your question. Yeah. We'll make our way there. We'll make our way there. So we're talking about taste, and I think most people at this stage know that when we're talking about taste, we're talking about what you can actually detect with your tongue. So sweet, sour, salty, bitter, umami. And the interesting thing about taste is they've found that if you expose your mouth to one taste and then you switch to a different taste, the taste that you had before in your mouth beforehand is going to impact your perception of the one afterwards. So for example, if you're having that very sweet dessert that you were just talking about, and then you have a sip of Pilsner, the sweetness in that dessert is going to crush any of the malt sweetness that was in that Pilsner. It's going to reduce it to just hops, and it's going to aggravate the bitterness in that beer, and it's going to cause just a pretty much a clash. It's not going to be great. So at a beginner level, when we talk about taste, I think the key thing to do is to keep an eye out for potential taste clashes. So in beer, the two tastes that you want to look out for are bitterness and acidity. Mm-hmm. And those are not going to work well with any food that is sweet, that is very sweet, any food that is very sour, or any food that is really umami rich. So it's very simple. If you have a very sweet food, a sour food, so the cake you were talking about, a sweet food, sour food, or a food that is really high in umami, you're going to want to avoid a very bitter or a very sour beer.
So my IPA is probably not a good dessert beer then, right?
not a straight IPA.
Yeah,
you might find a double IPA that'll work if it has enough sweetness to it,
right,
and enough strength to it. You know, there's endless play. And that's the fun thing about the beer selection that we have right now is, you know, again, let's not even talk about the number of IPAs that are out there, because IPA is its own, I think they could create, you know, well, the BJCP has already expanded, right, the IPA category to tons and tons of subsections because it's
There's a lot of variations. No, everything IPA. From, you know, clear IPA to, I mean, there's all kinds of crazy stuff now. What was the other one? Brut IPA, Brut. I think, is another one.
The Brut IPA. And now I was just reading about the West Coast Pilsner, which I'm trying to untangle from the India Pale Lager. But it's all related. It's all related. So in beer, you want to avoid or just be, not avoid, but be mindful of beers that are very sour, very bitter. Mm-hmm. And with foods, what you want to look out for are very sour foods and very sweet foods for the same reason. So these are, you know, just a couple of taste interactions that'll help you avoid major pitfalls. From there, there's all, you know, every single combination has an interaction. And as you get into more advanced levels of beer and food pairing, you can really use those interactions to like fine tune and create, you know, dynamic pairings and really compelling interactions. But at a beginner level, if you just remember those five things, so bitterness, those four things, bitterness and acidity in beer, mm-hmm. And sweetness and acidity in food, and to just proceed with caution there, you'll be fine.
So are there some special rules to handle maybe food that is acidic or food that is very sweet? Would I pair that with a particular style?
Again, there's many, it depends on the food.
Okay.
But you just want to avoid something overly bitter or something overly sour. So you're okay. not going to pair a sweet dessert, for example, with a goza.
Yeah.
Or a Berliner Weisse.
Or an IPA we talked about. Yeah, exactly.
Or an IPA. You might be able to get away with some Flanders Reds, you know, something like the Duchesse de Bourgogne, which is sweetened. You know, you might be able to get away with some desserts. And like I mentioned earlier, a double IPA, particularly one that has a bit more of a malt character to it. I've heard there's triple IPAs out there now as well. Have you had one?
Oh yeah, there's definitely triple IPAs have been out for a long time actually. Yeah.
Well, they haven't quite made it here, I don't think.
No.
What are they like? Are they very dry generally, or are they?
They're quite strong, as you might guess, and they've got a lot of bitterness. I mean, that's basically, you know, you're using a lot of malt and a lot of bitterness. So I don't know. They can be quite good. I don't particularly. I'm not a huge IPA fan, so I'm not a big connoisseur of the style. But I have had
this
them.
This is not the time for you, my friend.
Yeah. I think anybody who listens to the show probably knows I prefer dark beers as my favorite. So.
I think they're coming back. I think they're coming back.
That's good because they were for a while there. Yeah. I couldn't find them in the store anymore. It was only pretty much variations of IPA or Budweiser or something. You know.
It looks like we'll see. I'm reading a lot about the return of milds and of lower alcohol dark beers, and then we'll see where that takes us.
Well, great. So going back one step, can you explain to us again the difference between taste and flavor? Because we never did cover that, I guess.
So taste is what you can detect with your tongue. So sweet, sour, salty, bitter, umami. And then when we're talking about flavor, we're talking about, actual flavors that you actually perceive them with your nose. So
most of it's with your nose, right?
Caramel. Yeah. Chocolate. I'm really on a dessert kick today.
Yeah.
Tea flavor, anything that is, something that is, that you would know as a flavor that you describe. So when I talked earlier about matching flavors, you don't want to match bitter with bitter or sweet with sweet. That's taste. That's separate. So what you want to match is chocolate with chocolate, orange with orange, butterscotch with butterscotch. I'm really on a dessert kick today. I don't know why. I think there might be a dessert in my future. But herbs with herbs. And that's where you want to create the matching.
Well, finally, let's talk about texture. How does texture apply to beer and food, and how does it help us pair the two?
Yeah, so with texture, I'm sure that many are aware, or maybe they have heard that, a high alcohol, so that alcohol warmth and perhaps acidity, not perhaps acidity, and acidity, can be used to cut through rich or oily foods. So that's something that people might have heard. But the truth is that beer will generally mostly cut through anything because of its carbonation. So when it comes to texture, again, at the beginner level, it's not necessarily something that you need to worry about too much. And if anything, the great thing about the texture of beer and the carbonation of beer is that it will make any pairing more compelling. So even earlier when I was talking about, you know, chocolate beer and chocolate cake, yes, there's a sameness, but where we're really going to get the dynamic difference there is in the texture, because that beer is going to be cold and carbonated and that cake is going to be not carbonated. And it could be cold, it could be warm, but that, it's going to add a dimension to the pairing. So that's, you know, just a wonderful thing about beer in general when pairing it with food. And then, of course, as you get more advanced in your beer and food pairing, you can really start thinking about the body of the beer and how it will play off the texture of a food. So, for example, if I have a very dry food, I look for a beer that has a, you know, a richer, fuller mouthfeel, because that creates like a really lovely contrast there. But those are more advanced techniques. At a beginner level, you know, the texture basically just works. So that's good.
Interesting. Can you give us an example of maybe matching the textures?
Yeah. So, with texture, I usually more often go with contrast.
Okay.
Then
yeah, that's
with
fine.
Matching to create, because for me, the beer and food pairing journey is as follows.
Go ahead.
At a beginner level, it's about finding harmonies and making sure that the flavors match, right? So that we're talking, I think I've said it three times now, but chocolate cake with chocolate beer.
Yeah.
Or, you know, that burger that I talked about with the porter. That's just harmonizing the flavors. And then as you get more advanced, what you want to do is create a little bit of a dynamic, because if there is a little bit of tension and there is a little bit of interplay, then there's more going on in your mouth, right? It's more dynamic, it's more compelling. So I will use texture in that way. If a food is, I mentioned earlier, very dry, I'm going to look for something that has a beer that has a fuller body. Another thing, a classic thing to do is with a food that is particularly rich, find a beer that is highly, highly carbonated. And that carbonation is just going to, I mean, I'm sure you've had a beer with oily food. The carbonation just bursts out. And it creates that that really fun textural interplay in your mouth. So those are the kinds of things that you're looking for when it comes to texture.
Awesome. Well, I want to follow up with a few food examples. For example, how would we go about picking a good food to go with something like a Flanders Red Ale?
Okay, so we talked about the different aspects, and now I'm going to sort of walk you through those aspects in action. So we're going to start with the flavor. And of course, there are many different Flanders Reds out there. So I'm just going to imagine a Flanders Red in my mind, and I'm going to go ahead and say that it has toasted notes from the malt and maybe a little bit from the barrel, maybe a hint of chocolate. Usually there's dried fruit notes, typically cherry and orange, maybe like a sour plum note, and then a balsamic vinegar. So those are my flavors. And if I think about those flavors, now I have to think of foods that have those flavors. So off the top of my head, I'm thinking like maybe a Moroccan pilaf rice.
Okay.
So the rice pilaf that comes with dried fruit in it, which will pair with the fruit in the beer. There's also often some searing that happens in the early stages. So that's going to match the toasted notes in the beer. So that's one example of a food that could work. There's also a lot of meats. You were talking about complementary flavors earlier. So there are some meats that are just great with cherry or with orange, right? So I'm thinking about like duck, for example, or rabbit. So that's another direction we could take it. Then I'm thinking maybe a salad, like a green salad, but just with croutons. So you get the toastiness and some dried fruit, and then maybe a balsamic vinaigrette. Boom, that's three bridges right there. Going into dessert, perhaps like a cherry and nut cake would be interesting, or even just like a cherry crumble. So those are a number of different foods that could work well. And then the task at hand is to look at the intensity, right?
Yeah.
Because a Flanders red is not low in intensity.
No.
It's not high in intensity. I would put it usually at medium high because, you know, that sour note can be quite intense.
You mentioned sours can be hard to pair too, right?
Yeah. So I would put it medium high in intensity. So right away, the rice is out. It's not going to work. It's not intense enough. And the salad is out, right? The green salad with the fruits.
Probably it's be just overwhelmed, not gonna, I guess, right?
Yeah. Not going to have enough intensity.
Yeah.
So then we are left with, what was I talking about? The meat. So like the duck or rabbit. And we're left with the desserts that I talked about. So like a cherry nut cake, I think I said, and a cherry crumble. And now, as you just mentioned, we got to look at at tastes.
Yeah.
Because the beer is sour. So we know it's not going to work with a very sweet food. So I would take the cake right out of the equation. And we're left with the meat or the cherry crumble. The cherry crumble is touch and go. It's going to depend on the Flanders red. Again, some Flanders reds are sweeter than others. I think we talked about that earlier. But also, like some crumbles, if you make a crumble with a tart cherry, you know, it doesn't need to be necessarily that sweet. So that could work well. Or if you're looking to have that beer with a main course, something like a duck with, I mean, I guess you could do a duck à l'orange, although again, that might be sweet, but probably like a duck with a cherry chutney would work really, really nicely there. So that's sort of the thought process.
So it sounds like in this case, maybe a main course would be good to go with a Flanders red with the appropriate meat, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting. Well, let's work backwards instead from the food and try and pair it up with a beer.
Right.
So let's start with something like a risotto, maybe a mushroom risotto.
Right, because that's, you know, sometimes you have to pair beer first.
Yep.
But more often you're pairing food first, right? You're looking at a menu, you're deciding what you're going to eat, and then based on that, then you're going to make your beer selection. So I call this pairing food first. And it's the same, right? We got to start with the flavors. We're talking, did you say a mushroom risotto?
Yeah, mushroom. Yeah.
Yeah. So with the mushroom risotto, obviously there's mushroom flavors. Those will be sort of toasted, earthy flavors because those mushrooms are sauteed ahead of time. There's also usually onions that are sauteed. So we're going to get caramelized flavors from those onions. We're going to obviously get, you know, rice/white bread notes from the rice.
Absolutely.
And then there'll be nutty flavors from the Parmesan. And sometimes, you know, there'll be some herbs in there. It's pretty typical to have maybe some thyme. So that's a breakdown of the flavors. And even as I'm listing those flavors, right, I said like rice/white bread. I said toast. I said caramel. So my mind is going to some of the beers that you enjoy, right?
Yeah.
to a darker sort of a brown, probably not, you know, we haven't talked chocolate or coffee, so I wouldn't go necessarily to a stout or porter, but some kind of brown beer. So
seems
if I look
like
at
would
the
offset
spectrum.
Offset the mushrooms well, possibly, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because they have those toasted, earthy notes. So, right. So we have that spectrum of brown beers. We can start maybe with an American dark ale or an international dark ale would be probably at the bottom of the intensity spectrum, then go a little bit more intense, maybe a mild. We were talking about the mild earlier, or Munich Dunkel, probably similar in intensity, alt beer, an English brown, or a double, right? So these are all beers that have those malt characteristics that I talked about, but they vary in intensity.
Yeah.
So the next step is to look at intensity. And here's the interesting thing, and I'd be curious to know what you think about the intensity of a risotto, because it's a bit of a misleading one. Would you say risotto is intense or not intense?
Not super intense, although mushrooms got a little more flavor to it than maybe some other forms of risotto, but it's not super intense in general, I would say.
Yeah, it's certainly not as intense as, you know, a rich vindaloo or something like that, but it does have quite a bit of intensity to it, especially the umami is very, very strong between the Parmesan and the cooked mushrooms. It's also quite rich in texture. So I would lean towards the higher end of the spectrum. So towards, I wouldn't pair it with an international dark lager, but definitely a double would work well, or an English brown ale would also probably work very well there. And we're not dealing with any bitterness or acidity, so we don't have to worry about tastes at all. And so I would probably make the final call here based on texture. And we talked earlier about like a rich foods being great with a beer that has a bolder carbonation, and you're double with the bottle conditioning and the higher carbonation, usually than an English brown, is the way that I would go, just to get that additional textural interplay. So that's how it works when you're going food first. It's pretty straightforward. It takes a little practice.
Well, I mean, both those beers have quite a bit of complexity to them, so they both have some advantages. I don't know. Just in my mind, the mushroom might go better with the English because of that added complexity and maybe a little more sweetness in the flavor. But interesting, a double would probably be quite good as well, I would think.
And again, it depends which English you have and which double.
Yeah,
right?
Of course.
And which risotto. Because there's different ways to make the risotto, and there's different, doubles are fairly consistent, I would say, but, English browns, I've had, quite a range. If you consider, like more of a craft brewed example on one end and like the Newquay brown on the other end, like those are, vastly different beers.
No, you're absolutely right. They vary from, something that's basically colored water all the way up to, almost a porter, really.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you'd have to pick your beer wisely.
Well, I've been able to attend a number of times, actually. I've been able to attend paired beer food meals where they actually have different courses with a different beer for each course. So how do you go about, setting up something like that, maybe planning a meal where you have a beer matched to the particular course? And then, let's do that first. Yeah.
Sure. Well, the actual pairing is the same. Right, whether we've already talked about various courses, and so the technique is the same, but the thing you really want to be aware of when you're planning a dinner is the flow. Mm-hmm. Right, we talked about taste interactions and how if you have one taste in your mouth, it'll impact what you're tasting next. So you want to make sure that the foods and the beers are presented in the correct order. And so what I usually do is I start with the beer. Again, I think I may have mentioned this already. I always like to start with the beer first because you can tweak the food endlessly, right? If the food I pick doesn't quite match the beer, I can add something, I can take something away. I can really fine tune that food until it matches the beer. Whereas if I start with the food and the beer isn't quite right, I would have to reach for a different beer and I might not find exactly what I'm looking for. So I usually start whenever possible with the beers first. And then I put them in the correct tasting order. I don't know if that's something that you have any experience with. I do have a video on YouTube, and it's also in my book, The Technique to Make Sure that the Beers Are in the Correct Tasting Order. And then from there, usually the tasting order starts least intense, goes to most intense. So you'll know that the first beer will work well with an appetizer, and your last beer will work well with dessert. If there's a little bit of a jog somewhere between two beers, then all you have to do is create like a palate cleanser between the two. Fruit beer is a nice little palate cleanser that you can offer between courses just to change things around. But as a general rule, that's the way that I like to operate, and it works very well.
And then how do you pair something like an appetizer or dessert with a beer?
It's the same technique.
Yeah.
It's absolutely the same method. And, obviously if we're looking at, there's a range of appetizers out there. I was going to say you're going to probably want to focus on light beers.
Yeah.
But there is really a range out there. And, once you get familiar and handy with food pairing, there's all kinds of things you can do. Mm-hmm. Like I distinctly remember I was preparing a dinner a number of years ago, and my clients wanted to focus on Italian beers. So I'm in Ontario. We don't have a huge selection. I found all of the Italian beers that I could. I zeroed in on five that were dynamically different, right? I didn't want to present five lagers. And it just so happened that the most intense beer was a beer called Panil Berike, which is very sour. It's very sour. It is akin to a Flanders red. If memory serves, it's higher in alcohol. It definitely has more barrel character. The brewer of that beer is the son of vintners, and his brewery, I think it might not be in existence anymore.
Okay.
Well, it either is or was on the winery itself. So there was a lot of like wild yeast in the air. There was a lot going on in this beer, and it was by far the most intense beer. So I knew I had to put it at the end, and that meant pairing it with dessert. And so, you know, I thought about it, and I ended up coming up with a little cherry tart, I think it was, with some kind of tart. So I made sure that there was like a solid crust to it. It wasn't cherries. It was figs.
Figs, okay. Well, that's even more intense.
Fig tart. So, you know, you think figs, you're definitely thinking dessert, but it's not super sweet, right? That's where I was headed with the figs. And also with the sort of the toastier notes of the figs pairing with the beer and the complexity of the figs with the more wine-like overtones of that beer, a nice thick crust to pair with the malt character. And then I had a balsamic reduction drizzled on top. I had a chef who was really game, and I was just able to like dictate, this is what I would like. And I remember just crossing my fingers on the day, and it ended up being everyone's favorite pairing night.
That's
yeah.
Great.
So, all that to say, like, I could stand here in front of you and say, like, well, you know, as we were talking about earlier, you have to have sweeter beers with desserts and lighter beers with appetizers. But really, anything can be done if you just have to find the right combination. And that, to me, is the fun of pairing beer with food, is these challenges and these taste adventures.
Awesome, Marilla. Well, I know you've got this online course that you put together. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that and where folks can learn more?
Sure. So the course is called Mastering Beer and Food Pairing, brought to you by Beerology. It's online and it's asynchronous. So that just means that you can log in from wherever you are and take it whenever you want on your own time. Everything is there waiting for you. And the other really important thing that I like to always mention is that you can complete the course with any beer. And that was just really important to me for this to be accessible. I live, as we mentioned at the beginning, in Canada. So a lot of my early days in beer were spent reading about beers that I had no access to. And even like within Canada, the beer selection in different provinces is completely different. You know, when I go and give courses in different provinces, I have to completely rework any course based on the local beer selection. So I didn't want that to happen. It's something, you know, your listeners who have my book will also know that it was a big important piece of my book. In each style page, when I have, you know, the style listings, like the commercial examples, I made sure that they include at least one beer that can be found in any part of the US or any part of Canada, so that it could be as accessible as possible. And with my course, because it's online and we're talking globally now, the easiest approach was not to require any specific beer. So you can take the course and complete it with whichever beers you have handy. If you work with beers, you can complete it with those beers. That would make a lot of sense. And if you homebrew, you can go ahead and complete the course with your homebrews, as long as, you know, in some cases you do need, you know, four or five bottles. So as long as you have a number of bottles from the same batch, you can complete the course with those beers. So that's a very important piece to communicate. And then in terms of the content, we talk about the theory, so a much more expanded version of what we talked about today. And then we apply that theory. There are quizzes, there is worksheets, there's homework, you know, all kinds
homework.
Of tools you can
no.
use. It's I'm optional. Just, I don't correct it.
Well, as long as I get to eat and drink it, I think that's okay. But
it does involve eating and drinking.
Oh, okay. Well, that's
that
good.
I can guarantee you. A lot of taste adventures. Because at the end of the day, food pairing, I'm going on a little tangent here, but is there's two pieces. One is understanding the theory, and two is practice, right? And practice is not only trying to make good pairings. Practice is just paying attention to different foods and different beers and how they interact.
It's kind of like beer judging. I mean, when I sample a beer, I try really hard to take some effort to actually judge it, You know what I mean? And not just drink it, I guess. But, it's, I'm practicing, right?
Same thing. Exactly. Yeah. So a piece of the homework, each section has a different piece of homework that's a different sort of taste challenge that you can take on. Like I said, I don't look at the homework or grade the homework. And that piece is really for people who want, you know, the additional reinforcement of the information. People learn in different ways, right? So there's written homework for people who learn from writing. There's the taste homework for people who, you know, I've been teaching for a long time. So I just wanted to make sure, especially because it's online and I don't have, you know, direct contact with people taking the course, that it, connected with as many different learning styles as possible. So there's that. And then there's also a practical piece. So each person who completes the course picks a beer, whichever beer they want. And then through a 5-part project that applies the learnings in each of the 5 parts of the course, they work towards finding a perfect pairing for that beer. And I assist along the way. So at each step, there's a submission and then I provide feedback and we work together just to make sure that the information is understood. And not only that, but that you're able to actually apply it to put together a pairing. So there's that. Then there's advanced techniques. So for those who are already pretty familiar with food pairing and looking for ways to take it to the next level, we talked a bit about texture today, but there's a few other tidbits in there and other fun ways that you can create more dynamic pairings. And then there's another section on presentation, which covers, again, some of the things that we talked about earlier, like when you're putting together a beer dinner, how you plan that flow. For those who, you know, would like to entertain, there's a section on how, you know, how to plan your talk and how to actually put together the beer dinner. And then, you know, all the logistics, portion sizes, things like that. Really everything you need to know to put together increasingly delicious pairings, increasingly more consistently, and how to present them in the best possible light. I've been, you know, very happy with the course. So far, everyone who's taken it is delighted. I have tons of reviews. So yeah, it's been great. And awesome. You can find the course at beerology.thinkific.com.
What was the middle part? Can maybe you could spell it out there? I don't know.
Yeah, it's beerology.thinkific. So T-H-I-N-K, like to think, and ific, like terrific. So beerology.thinkific, T-H-I-N-K. Okay, I can't spell it. I think you got the message. So beerology.thinkific.com. You can also just look me up on my website. There's a link to it everywhere. There's a link to it. So you can find out more there. You can register there. Of course, reach out with any questions, sign up for updates. And then for those who are maybe not necessarily ready to take the course yet, but just looking for more beer and food pairing inspiration, I did want to point people to the Instagram account that I created for the course. It's called Mastering Beer and Food, and I am so happy with it. What it is a community of people from various parts of the world, all kinds of different countries, submitting to me pairings that they enjoy or that, you know, some of them are beer sommeliers from various parts of the world and pairings that they have put together. Others are just, you know, people who happen to be in a restaurant and taste a beer and a food and are like, oh my God, this tastes so good together. I have to take a picture and post it. And then I repost those. So on this account, basically, if you follow, you'll just get food pairing after food pairing coming to you. I know that I really enjoy on my personal feed just seeing those food pairings come up and exploring how different people pair different beers with different foods. And it's a great place to find inspiration. So that's Mastering Beer and Food on Instagram.
Awesome. Well, Mirella, thank you so much for coming on the show today. We are running a little low on time, but I really appreciate you coming in and explaining, kind of a complex subject in a clear way. Thank you.
Okay, I'm glad you thought it was clear. I came to a point where I was like, is this just clear in my head? But you know, it's hard to explain without food and beer actually in front of you.
Well, it helped me at least. I was, I'm able to imagine some of the foods and imagine some of the beers and go, yeah, I can kind of see how that might work, you know?
Yeah. And, to anyone who's curious about pairing beer and food, I would just say, just dive in and play, you know, there's a lot of wonderful things to do.
I'm going to try next time I go to the restaurant. I'm going to see if I can order something that might go with at least the main meal, you know?
For sure. Yeah. For sure. I'd also wanted to mention, because I'm going to go ahead and guess that a great number of your listeners are homebrewers.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, that to me is the ultimate. I mean, if you understand beer and food pairing, that means that you could create the perfect beer to pair with your favorite foods. You know, whether you're into like pizza or pad thai or spanakopita, momo, what, you know, whatever you're into, once you understand the theory and you've had a little practice, you can like create the perfect beer to go with whatever you enjoy eating. I mean, obviously it takes a while to brew beer, so you're not going to be able to do it in real time. But if there's a couple of foods that you really enjoy having regularly to, you know, work on fine tuning and perfecting a beer that works well with that food. I mean, that is the ultimate as far as I'm concerned. I think that's just
well, you covered hamburgers earlier, right? And you decided that goes best with porter or something like that. But let's hit pizza real quick. 10 seconds. What does pizza go with?
I personally enjoy pizza with an amber ale, and I am partial, but I am partial to a pizza that is like a four cheese.
Yeah,
pizza.
Something fairly mild.
And I find that like the blue cheese saltiness and the sweetness of the amber ale is a really great compliment, and then the hops so cut through
cheese
very
pizza
nicely.
And amber. That's our closing advice, yeah. Then, right?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. But you know, if you're having a different pizza, you might have to reach for a different beer.
Of course.
That's the fun.
Makes sense. Well, thank you, Morel. I really appreciate you coming on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me. I love talking about beer and food.
My guest today was Morella Amato, Master Cicerone, a national beer judge. And of course, we talked quite a bit about her online course called Mastering Beer and Food Pairing. Thank you once more, Morella.
Take care.
A big thank you to Morella Amato for joining me this week. Thanks also to Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. They offer access to videos, brewing courses, exclusive articles, and the amazing Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. Go to beerandbrewing.com to get your subscription today. And also the American Homebrewers Association. The Homebrewers Association invites you to choose your own brew venture. Join for 1 year and select a free brewing book from more than 60 titles to match your fermentation goals. Visit homebrewersassociation.org/beersmith to join the American Homebrewers Association and treat yourself to a new brewing book. And Beersmith Web, the online version of Beersmith software. Beersmith for the Web lets you design great beer recipes from any browser, including your tablet or phone. Edit recipes on the go with the same full suite of recipe building tools as our desktop version. Try Beersmith Web today by creating a free account at beersmithrecipes.com. And finally, a reminder to click that like and subscribe button on YouTube, iTunes, Spotify, or whatever platform you're listening on. Clicking those buttons goes a long way to supporting the show. I'd like to thank you for listening, and I hope you have a great brewing week.